Hello there. I'm Aaron Martell.
I'm Rockin' Mike.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Lou Figaro.
And welcome to Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, a podcast where we talk about and review a rock album of our choice. This episode, we are joined by a returning guest co-pilot. He is the producer of the State of Amorica podcast, Jason Doncis, JD. Welcome back to the R4 podcast.
Oh, very excited to be here. Glad to hang out with the R4 royalty here.
We got the A-team on. And while I got you here, JD, I think it's time that we made a little announcement. Sometime in February 2024, we will be celebrating the 300th episode of the show. And that episode will also be my final episode as the host of the R4 podcast. But fear not, listeners. I'm going to be giving the keys to our friends at the State of Amorica podcast. So, JD, that means the R4 podcast will live on and keep going.
Yeah, that's right. We, over at the State of Amorica podcast, it's a Black Crowes podcast, but many of us, I would say a lot of the music we listened to started with the Crowes and it spread from there. And I would say 2/3 of the music I listened to started with Crowes, whether they covered something, a band opened for them, whatever it may be. And the community we've built over there really has become much more than just a Black Crowes-centric community. It's a music lovers community. And we've tried to step into that a couple of times. We had our album club series that we tried to do to talk about music that wasn't the Crowes. But it just didn't really feel like it fit well in the vibe of the podcast we were doing. So when I got word that Mr. Martell was going to step down from the R4 podcast, I thought, what a great vehicle to continue to build on this community and talk about music in general. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that R4 podcast has become a huge part of my life, weekly, biweekly, whatever it may be. I love talking about, listening to people talk about all sorts of rock records. And I really thought that this was a great way that not only could the R4 podcast live on, but we could continue to expand the music loving community that you've started, that we've started over at State of Amorica. And so we look forward to taking the baton and keep moving it forward.
I love that, dude. And we've always loved you guys there at State of Amorica. You know, we've had Ian and David on many times to review records. So I just think this is a terrific fit. I mean, I'm stepping down just because, you know, for personal reasons. I'll probably go into it on the 300th episode, but I'm really excited that the podcast is going to keep going. And I can't think of any other people I would rather give this to than you guys. So I'm very excited. I will be a listener.
And hopefully at some point, maybe you jump on and host one or two every once in a while.
Hey, you never know. All right, let's get back to the show. So on this episode, we're going to review Tool's 2019 album, Fear Inoculum. JD, give us your Tool timeline and where you come in with the album.
Yeah, so I grew up, I think I've expressed before, I'm a child of the 90s. My entire high school and college years were in the 90s. And Tool was a huge part of that. The biggest challenge I always had with Tool is I was a little put off by the initial records. My first exposure to Tool was at a restaurant called Mr. Fables here in town that I worked at when I was a teenager. And my manager there just always was trying to give us, like, you got to listen to this, man. This is sweet. And that was the first time I heard a Tool record. I heard Opiate and I heard Undertow. And I liked the musicality of it. I liked the tone. I liked all of that piece, but I was really struggling with the lyrical piece of those records. It's a little bit of shock rock, and it didn't really rub me the right way. So fast forward, later in the 2000s, after I graduated, I have a family. I've got a good friend of mine who has a family, and he went through a time where he lost his parents. Specifically in this time frame, it was his mother. And he was really struggling with that. And the record that really helped him a lot was 10,000 Days, because that's a record where Maynard really struggles with the loss of his mother. And he really encouraged me to listen to that record and kind of step back into the Tool universe. And I really enjoyed how much Maynard's vocals and his music content had matured. I really appreciate music that has emotion and struggle in it. And in that 10,000 Days record, which you guys reviewed here on R4, you really just hear Maynard asking for, you know, what's the truth? What's the real? Struggling with spiritual issues, struggling with grief. And I really enjoyed that record. And so I dove back a little bit into Lateralis and Enema and kind of got caught up. And then obviously we waited for this record forever. And when it came out, I had pre-ordered the CD. I got the CD. It's one of my questions. I'll be curious which version of this we're going to do, because I have the CD, which only could fit the actual 7 songs.
That's what we're doing. We're doing that.
Yeah, perfect. Yep. Good. And just the sophistication of it. I just loved the whole concept of it right from the beginning. And I was glad to hear more growth from Maynard. And we'll talk about it when you get into the songs. But yeah, I heard them from day one, but I didn't really get into them heavily until the 10,000 Days record.
Okay. Rockin' Mike, is this your first Tool episode?
It is.
All right.
It's the first one. So I came in on Undertow. I was in college at the time, and I loved the creepiness of the videos. Of course, that Beavis and Butthead episode didn't hurt with the stop-motion animation. And his Butthead's like, whoa, if I could move my arm like that, I'd never leave the house. I got a kick out of that. But I got into Tool at that point. And then, as I've talked about many, many times on the podcast, I pilfered a ton of stuff out of my college radio station. And that's how I got my copy of Opiate. And I went all the way up and I got 10,000 Days. I still don't own Fear Inoculum. 10,000 Days I struggled with, only because it seemed like his voice was a little too high, like his voice was changing. I didn't dive into it. And to be honest, a lot of the diehard Tool fans made me just want to dislike them in spite of them. And this album, when it came out, I gave it a couple listens. And I will continue that throughout the review. And then I actually saw them about 3 weeks ago, and we'll incorporate that into the review. And that's how I got into this record.
All right. Sam, we're doing it again, man. So why don't you let the listeners know, you know, like a quick rundown of your Tool time and where you come in with this record?
I remember hearing Undertow and liking it fine. And then it was a little later, and then Tony had an Enema. We like Enema. I don't know how you say it, but we like listened to it together and tried to figure out a couple songs, you know, try to play it. And then I was like, holy shit, this guy can, his second song, he's got this real long scream. And I was like, holy shit, this guy's still going, you know? And so then I started like going into it. And so I was a fan then. And so every time they came out, I'm one of those annoying Tool fans that piss people off because we're so pretentious. And if you don't know what they're talking about, then you don't know Tool, then you're stupid. One of those people for a minute. This album's changed my mind. So this is a tough listen, man.
Uh-oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah, because this album, when it came out, I was so excited and so happy that it was out. And there are some songs that I do love on it, but yeah.
All right, we'll get into it. Lou, your first Tool time, right?
Yeah, on the show.
All right.
In 1993, music was changing a lot, and lots of new sounds were happening. Things got dirtier, grungier, darker. And one night I was up late, and I saw that Sober video with the disturbing, creepy visuals, and I dug the song, Cast Like a Mood. And it wasn't the same thing that was being regurgitated. It had personality onto itself, and I liked it, and I picked it up. I picked up Undertow the next time I was out to the local whatever, and I've been a fan ever since, a big fan. I don't know if I was one of those annoying people. I just really dig this band, and I go to see them every time. I don't really talk to too many people about Tool unless you're into Tool. Tool sets themselves apart from everyone else with this, their punishing rhythms and poignant, yet cynical lyrics and bizarre, sometimes frightening and disturbing psychedelic imagery. And it all adds up to a home run formula for me. And over the years, their albums would come few and far between. The last was, 2006? And I had All Written Off, you know, a chance to set a new record. They've been teasing since 2012. So in 2018, when they started taking pre-orders for that new Tool album, I didn't question the $70 price tag for a deluxe edition with a built-in HD view screen and a speaker. Plopped down my hard-earned cash for what I was sure would be an album that wouldn't disappoint.
All right. I admit that I have come a long way with this band. I used to hate Tool, but it was largely from a place of ignorance. I first thought they were a new metal band, so I initially had no interest. And then I found out that they're this proggy metal hybrid. And by the time I heard a couple of their tracks like Stink Fist and Schism, I became interested. But then I got turned off again by certain snobbish, insufferable members of their fan base. Thank you very much, Internet. But then super listener Sam George wanted to review 10,000 Days, which we did, and I was not so nice to it. I respected the musicianship, but I thought they were pretentious and robotic, and it rubbed me the wrong way. Then we reviewed Lateralis, which I liked better, but it still didn't fully win me over. But occasionally over these past few years, I'd give Tool a try for the fuck of it. I knew there was something about them that piqued my interest. And yes, the music started to grow on me. I even did some research into the wacky cosmic shit that this band taps into. And okay, it's kind of cool. So when this album was coming out, it was pretty heavily hyped. It had been, 13 years since 10,000 Days. So I gave it a handful of listens and then pretty much forgot about it until prepping for this podcast. Now I'll give you some basic facts about this record, ripped from Wikipedia. Fear Inoculum is the fifth studio album by American rock band Tool, released on August 30th, 2019 on Tool Dissectional under Volcano Entertainment, a division of RCA Records. It was produced by Tool and was recorded from March 2018 to January 2019 at Henson Recording, United Western Recorders, and The Loft, all three studios located in Los Angeles, California. It reached number one on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart and is certified gold by the RIAA. And here's the band's lineup card. We have Maynard James Keenan on vocals, Adam Jones on guitars, Justin Chancellor on bass, and Danny Carey on drums and synthesizer. There is an additional musician, which we'll mention as we see fit. Also, all music is written by Adam Jones, Danny Carey, and Justin Chancellor, and all lyrics are written by Maynard James Keenan. One more thing, and we already kind of alluded to it earlier. We're going to be reviewing the CD version of this album. The vinyl and digital versions have additional tracks on them and different track orders,
which are unnecessary.
Yeah. Okay, let's dig into a track-by-track analysis of this album. Leading things off is the title track, Fear Inoculum. JD, what do you say?
So this was the single from the record. This was the first song we got a taste of before the thing actually was released. Grammy nominated as the best rock song for that year. This also set the Guinness World Record for the longest song to hit the top 100 in the Billboard chart. That may have been passed by Taylor Swift now. But it's a good introduction to what we're about to get. And that's the first thing I think I got to say about this record. Let's not be deceived by what we have here. These songs are not, if you're expecting to hear a 3 or 4 minute rock song, this is not the record for you. I think the shortest song on here, if we count the songs off the CD track listing, is about 10 minutes long. These are journeys that you go on. And this one is a good one to start with. It's a lot of percussion. Again, Danny Carey, one of the best drummers, percussionists in the world. Right out of the gate, we get to experience that with some tabla, with bells, little explosions, some weird string elements that he's playing on different pads that he's got. It sounds a little Indian and Mid-Eastern, but it gets us going. Now, Tool is also a band that's primarily driven by bass. The bass sets the groove, and it's no different here, but this record as a whole is a much bigger Adam Jones showcase than probably we're used to if we go back to the old Tool records. A lot of solo stuff, a lot of really heavy, chuggy riffs. In this case, we get basically like kind of almost like a metal gaze, like a shoegaze type format, where we got a lot of percussion and instrumentation happening with very long, drawn out lyrics and a lot of big words. You know, we're using words like allegory and things like that in the lyrics. The guitar tone is very fuzzy and the bass riff drives it underneath that. I could go through all the different time signatures I marked, but if I did that for every song, we'd be here longer than the record. So the main thing with this is I think it gives us a good format for what we're going to get into with the combination of the finger picking kind of brighter guitar figures that Adam plays, and the heavier chugs with the bass driving it underneath and percussion all over the place. Drum fills that are off-timed. I couldn't tell you the time signatures because I don't care. I just really sit and enjoy how it all comes together. And again, you know, at 9:30, yeah, 9:30 in the song, we get a nice guitar solo from Adam that kicks in after a chugging little riff pattern. I really like this to set the table. If you listen to this song and you like it, then you probably will like the rest of it. If you listen to this song and go, this is way too long and way too much weird shit happening, then you probably should just take it out and move on.
Rockin' Mike.
All right. So when this first came out, I was a hard no. I've always struggled with ambient mood setting music. I'm kind of a guy of extreme emotions, so I want to release those emotions. If I want to go on a trip where I question my existence, I'll just force myself into a conversation with the waste of flesh I call my ex-wife. However, that being said, a buddy of mine from college goes, hey, Tool's coming to the Garden. You want to go to see Tool? And I was like, there's no way in hell he's going to get tickets. So I went, sure. Not thinking I'd actually end up going. And like an hour later, he texts me, we're in. I was like, fuck. So we end up at the Garden a couple weeks back and they open with this and it blew me away. The visuals, it's the entire package. And this song combined with the light show that they did, it just really blew me away. And I'm going to keep going back to Danny Carey all night. His percussion is kind of the glue that holds everything together. And I really like it. You can hear everybody. You can hear everybody. You can pick everybody out. It's not muddy for me. And I've always loved Adam Jones' guitar tone. And Maynard's vocals just seem to float on this one. So just kind of put on your headphones, lean back, and prepare for a ride.
Sam.
He predicted the pandemic, man. Nobody mentioned that yet. Jesus, man. It was just before the pandemic, man. It's like Maynard knew. He's a fucking prophet. He knew, man. He sees patterns and shit.
Listen, I like this song fine. It's a good song, but it doesn't hold up to the other openers of their other records, man. And that's why I was like so disappointed if you compare them to their other records, man. Even the way Undertow sounds, man, the first song is Prison Sex, banger. The next Anima is it's got Sting Fist, and then fucking The Grudge, and then Vicarious. This one is the weakest of all the openers songs, and so sat with this record for 4 years, and so I kind of know it's just not as good as the other openers. It's a good song. It's a good Tool song. I like his high register voice. I loved it, and like he did in The Pot. And his higher register voice is really pretty, and then he gets mean too. So, and I like all the dynamics and everything. And Danny Carey is the best living drummer alive. Justin Chancellor is amazing, but this song it doesn't blow my skirt up like the other ones did.
Lou.
Ah, I see you have the machine that goes bing.
Bing. Bing. It wakes my dogs up, makes them bark. Bing. Layer upon layer, they build this delicate puzzle, overlapping time signatures and polyrhythms. The song is a slow-burning atmospheric piece that builds to a crescendo of distortion and pounding. I interpret the emotive, almost Gregorian chant-like lyrics to be about fear and how it can control us. And now, as I lie in my room listening to this, I've got the lights out, I got a glass poured. I may or may not have been altered by a certain unnamed fungus that may have crept its way into tonight's pre-review chocolate snack, but
yeah.
Section after section, the song's movements pummel different parts of the psyche, almost full body contact prog. They slice time, subdivide. Danny Carey driving this whole thing. This is his baby, and without him, this band doesn't work. But I think it's a good opener, and I think it's a good song.
Odd percussion, Adam Jones's volume swells, Danny Carey on tablas, and Justin Chancellor's funky bass. This has Eastern or Indian music vibes to it. JD, you mentioned that. Maynard James Keenan even raises and lowers the pitch of his voice in a vaguely Eastern fashion. The track builds slowly, getting heavier. Carey's drums are syncopated as fuck with different time signatures, and he's just incredible. I've always said this about this guy. And then around the 6-minute mark, Jones introduces a new riff, and off they go on that tangent. And for some reason, Keenan loves to fuck with his voice, adding different effects and shit, and I don't know why he feels the need to do that, but I digress. There's a lot of open space in this whole track. Each instrument gets a chance to breathe. Somebody mentioned that too. And even though the new section rocks a little harder, it really doesn't change tempo. It stays at a medium pace. Now, Tool lyrics always leave room for interpretation. And what I pull from this is, as one gets older and lives a full life, all the various fears that person has experienced and collected can be seen as irrelevant and expelled as a sort of inoculation or protection against them. Don't live a life of fear. Bless this immunity. I'm probably wrong as fuck, but hey, wouldn't be the first time. I really dig the thunderous ending, and I very much dig this track, despite the fact that it runs over 10 minutes, and it's among the shorter tracks. Buckle up, motherfuckers. We're in for a long ride. This was the first single from the album that reached number 93 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart. As JD said, the longest song ever to make the chart. The next track is Numa.
About you. Reach out.
Mike, your thoughts?
All right. So this one continues the trip with the opening, with the way the song opens. But we all know the song really doesn't start until about a minute and a half in with John Chancellor in that bass. It seems like we're going to get this melodic but unfulfilled tension builder of a song. And then, boom, we get a riff at the 3:19 mark that releases the tension reminiscent of Sober, not the same, but a little reminiscent of it. But even those chords ring out, and trippingly, it brings us back to John Chancellor. This is how the song gets us, though. It builds, it releases, kind of, and then it builds the whole time. I want this huge metallic flush, and we all know we're not going to get it just by listening to the first, what are we, halfway through the second song, so 20 minutes of the album. But it's kind of like a really brutal horror movie. You want a Hollywood ending, but you know it would be a disservice to the movie to get it. And as it builds, if we were to all of a sudden get that big, like early Tool metallic kind of flush that we get, it's not going to really serve the song too well. So I'll take that solo riff at the 9:25 mark, and I'll just enjoy the ride.
Sam.
Man, I really, really like this song. This is one of the songs on the record that I love. And the reason is because it's Danny. Man, I don't know if you guys have seen him, but there's a bunch of videos of drummers like listening, watching him play this song live. And everybody's seen him. And I love seeing people's like, holy shit, that was hard to do. And he did it easy. He made a mistake, but he made up for it. And it's incredible. I like the stuff that he does, you know, the weird, you know, the 5 to 7 to 8 to 7 to 5 to 8. I love that kind of stuff. And so I'm kind of like zoned in on it. It's trippy as fuck musically. You know what I mean? I don't know how to say it, but yeah, man. And I really like that he's still predicting the pandemic right before the pandemic. And I think that should be acknowledged by all of you, because if you're fucking Tool fans, but yeah, man, I love his fucking song, man. I will always put this in the playlist with Tool stuff. But again, you know, it's still kind of, I can think of a bunch of better Tool songs. I dig this song. It's great. And I love Danny Carey.
Fucking Tool fans. Lou.
You can almost see the segments and elements laid out in Pro Tools if you closed your eyes. They're assembled in almost block-like fashion as the tabla rides on top of the cyclic guitar strum pattern. The bass comes bounding in like Tigger from the Enchanted Forest. And the band syncs up and drives the main rhythm. Here comes Maynard. Out of the fog, wearing a spiked mohawk, tight leather pants, and a tartan jacket. Face painted like a twisted version of the cartoon Joker from the WB After School TV. Warning us, we are spirits nailed down with flesh. Our body's not what it makes us, us. It's our mind. And he predicted the pandemic, man. who cares about that shit? Let's just fucking spiral out. This is Tool, full bodies experience. It's visceral. Listening to it on a drive with the navigation directions on in the car is like as frustrating as trying to masturbate in the only house bathroom with no lock on the door. I never realized how frustrating it was until I tried it. Driving, that is. Danny's tribal beats and rhythms and Justin nailed to his right foot or his dick. Whatever else is making that pounding noise. Who the fuck knows? The guy's an alien. The two of them create the continent-moving oscillations and vibrations that drive you down to the darkest corners and tunnels of your mind. And if you keep your eyes closed too long, you see all the lights and flashing colors. Adam's delicate touch ranging from a lilting guitar melody to a cement bag heavy riffage that drops bombs between the drum beats and bass frequencies. Maynard floating in and out from ear to ear, reminding us we're born of one breath, one word, one spark. We are the sun. Hell yeah, Maynard, whatever you say. This is fucking amazing. My eyes are starting to glow.
That was fucking beautiful, man.
JD.
Well, this is the song that got attention for two different reasons. The first one, Sam mentioned, all of the drum cam live videos that are out there. Watching Danny Carey pull this song off, drive it, energize it, change it up. It's one of the most miraculous things you'll see. And even when he does, if you watch, it seems crazy to watch multiple drum cams from different shows of the same song, watching the guy play the drums. But he does do different things each time, and he makes mistakes here or there. But it's just a miracle to watch how this guy can hit all these different beats on all these different off times using what seems to be like five different hands to be able to do it while this song chugs along. So that's the first reason why it's been fairly well known. The other one is actually, if you check on YouTube, you see a lot of like reaction videos to this, specifically from like pastors, because there's a lot of stuff in here that is not exactly theologically correct from a Christian perspective, but there's a lot of really interesting thoughts that Maynard puts out here. Some of them Lou touched on in his opus there that he just gave. The idea of spirit, the spirit being encased in flesh and being nailed down by it, specifically, he talks about how the flesh becomes pneuma, and pneuma specifically relates to a spirit or a soul or the creative force of a person. Like basically, like that's, we're created as these spirits and we're stuck in this flesh. And that aligns a lot with some of Christian theology that talks about how we were made to be in a perfect world, a sinless world, but then we took on flesh and sin came into the world, and then we struggle with that. And the themes of those lyrics aren't exactly theologically aligned, but it's very interesting what he's talking about here. Similarly with the one breath, one word, one spark. Again, if you go back in the book of Genesis, God created the world through speaking. Everything that he made originally was through his word. God said, let there be light, that type of thing. Except for humans were not made by his word. They were made by his breath. He gathered up the dust and he breathed into it. And that's how humans were made. And then we have this idea of the spark, which kind of relates to the more secular view of, you know, the Big Bang or how life began through a spark. And so he touches on each of those elements. All the while, behind this music that's very tribal, that's very spacey feeling, while also up-tempo. The best part, in my opinion, from musically for the song starts about 5.5 minutes in. And I guess, yes, I understand if you're listening. 5.5 minutes in is about the midpoint of this song when it really starts to kick in. The kind of tribal beat with the escalating guitar riff and the percussion kind of speeds up. The tempo kicks up. There's a lot of tom and conga work. The bass super deep, the boom, 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 and guitar gradually going up. And then a huge solo riff about 8 minutes in with the huge climax, double kicks going. And then it breaks all back down and we get back to the lyric, the, basically what it would be considered the chorus of the song. This is one of the best songs, not only on this record, but I think it's one of the best songs to be released in the last 5 years, in my opinion. Just the depth of it, of course, I don't know exactly what he's singing about, but I really can draw from the themes, and not to mention the musicianship of all of these guys. And the way they typically record is, you know, Chancellor and Jones and Danny Carey, they'll create these instrumentals that they send to Maynard, and then Maynard puts the vocals in afterwards. So for all that to sync up, I think Lou referred to like the Pro Tools piece. Yeah, these are probably highly manufactured songs in the studio, but when you watch those videos of them playing this live, and then you add, I think Rock and Mike mentioned the light show and all the stuff that they put into it, this is where you see, like, eventually I would guess that Tool will play in Vegas at that Sphere, and people will probably, like, literally die there.
A simple, clean riff and Carey doing some Eastern-sounding tippity-taps leads to a Chancellor bass riff that gets aped by Jones's electric guitar. It's another sprawling track that builds. Keenan has effects on his voice again. The time signature is odd, another Tool trademark. And holy fuck, Danny Carey's fills are insanely impressive. Then it's rinse and repeat through the second instrumental. And then, like the last track, it switches up to a weird electronic-sounding solo while Carey keeps providing Eastern-tinged percussion. And Jones gets in a simple melodic solo of his own. I don't know what else I can say about Carey's performance. He owns this track, and he's a fucking marvel on the kit. I'm not even going to touch these lyrics. Listen to what Lou said, and listen to what JD said, and you got it. I'll go with that. This track is a highlight of the album for me, despite its 11-minute, 53-second running time, and it was the second and final single that reached number 4 on the Billboard Hot Rock and Alternative Songs chart. The following track is Invincible.
Down.
Sam, lead us off.
I'm glad you skipped that last one. What the fuck are you doing? Okay, I'm sorry. I have to take some time to make a point about what you, when you download it and it has these fucking tracks on it, and I'm not going to let it go. What the fuck were you doing? That fucking bullshit, man. You fucking synthesizers. Like, one dude did that. It's fucking horrible. It's not good. Why are you doing this to me?
Not invincible, by the way.
Not invincible. This is not invincible. I'm talking about the third one. Fuck off of that. Okay, invincible. I like this song a lot. I can totally relate to it, man. It's like I'm a warrior, man. You get up and you work every day. You do the best you can, and then you just get fucking old, and now you got to accept this shit because you're trying to remain it's pretty straightforward, the lyrics, man. Trying to consequential, you know. You want to make an impact. You want to be the best you can, and you're getting older, and you're not as good as you used to be. And so I totally relate to this track. However, how many fucking open D string, the drop D, how many God damn it. You're better than that, fellas. It's like you've done that every fucking album, man, and you were always more creative than that. It's like if we're going to do this, we're playing a not as good zombie, you know? Come on, man. You get sick of it, man. This is my problem with this record. It thinks I'm stupid. I don't need so many fucking D open, you know, like open D palm mutes, man. Yeah, you can play every time signature there is. That's obvious. And I love listening to it. But when I try to sit down and think about it to where I'm going to talk about it to you guys, especially because you guys know what the fuck you're talking about. It's like, man, this is fucking boring, man. It's not dynamic. Yeah, you can do it all in these different time signatures in 5, 8, 7, 6, 13. Who the fuck knows? But it's not as good. This is where the pretentious thing comes in. This song could have been 7 minutes and I would have fucking loved it.
Lou.
Sam, I'm about to take your superpower. Adam gives us a guitar pattern. Okay. Then repeats it in varying patterns of seven when Danny comes in on the tabla. Now here comes Maynard, pontificating from his army days, weapon out, belly in. Invincible is a slower, more introspective track that deals with the themes of mortality and resilience. The song features some of the most album's most beautiful melodies, and Keenan's lyrics are particularly poignant. Justin Chancellor's echoed bass lines add a bounce to this as Adam weaves his guitar through the rhythm section like a dogfighting pilot streaking through the clouds, evading and locking onto his prey. The song takes a slowed-down march toward the midsection, reminding me of the march of the planet-killing toy soldiers. Perhaps marching hammers. Which, if you think about it, these guys are very Pink Floyd-influenced. Perhaps with a few more gallons of testosterone added, and more powerful hallucinogens. Pink Floyd, if they were loaded up with DMT and fisting each other in prison. Just think.
How dare you.
Well, that's a painted picture.
Just when you think it's over, it comes back double time, still in sevens, but with much more energy, exploding every facet of this chord pattern in time. I wish it had more of a release. They could have built it way more tension and had a beautiful release in the last section, but alas, no toolgasm for me as of yet.
JD.
What Lou said.
Mike.
All right, so this is where I'm going to sound like one of those pretentious Tool fans.
Oh, fuck.
I really like this song. So one of the few songs ever, I think, in the history of me doing this podcast where the lyrics grabbed me. I don't know if it's where I'm at in life or what, but I mean, it's reflective and sparse. The lyrics are emotional. This is my favorite performance by Maynard on this record. The first, I think it was third of the song, just the melody that he carries. There was no effects. It was just him. And I really like that. I like the part where he's like, warrior struggling to remain relevant. I don't know if there's a reason why he broke it all down into three syllables, every single one. Once I realized that, I was like, fuck, I'm doing it. Oh, God damn. So, for the first few, the music is maintaining, but it struggles. And Maynard's vocals get a bit robotic, this touch to it. But I think it ties into the lyrics because the narrator has false hope that they're going to find that fountain of youth. The song, as it breaks into urgency, as the narrator realizes that he too will age and the end will come. And I don't know if that urgency was to tie into lyrics on purpose, but if I'm playing pretentious Tool fan, it was all planned out and it's freaking genius. I also feel interestingly that this song, when I saw him, they played it. It was the 10th song of the set and he's singing about struggling to remain relevant. And then they go from this into Anima. So I thought that was kind of ironic. Not my favorite song on the album, but it's up there.
Another slow start with clean guitar arpeggios and what sounds like vibraphone notes, and Keenan singing clean without distortion. Thank you. Cool. Then add in syncopated drums and a bass line with a delay effect on it. And of course, we keep building, and Jones comes in with a cool, crunchy riff and a drifting melodic solo. Now Keenan's voice gets some backward effects on it, and it gets heavier and a bit more intense. Then it turns into a grinding instrumental passage, and I'm a bit into it, and Carrie's drum patterns become more intricate. Then it slows down and gets sludgier and more soloing from Jones, which is okay. Then we get a synthesizer solo in Keenan's voice through a vocoder. Then more crunchy riffs and a more straightforward beat. Did I just bore you with all that shit? That's kind of what happened to me, too. Lyrically, I'm guessing that this is about aging again and trying to stay vital and relevant in a young people's world through the metaphor of a tired old warrior telling tales of past battles won and struggling to remain consequential with the changing times. I don't know. I don't dislike this track, but it's 12 minutes and 44 fucking seconds, and it's the first one where I really feel it. This one definitely could have used some trimming. I'm with you, Sam. The next track is Descending. Lou, what do you got?
Well, so far, the whole record's been just one big guided meditation. Now, we hear the water washing onto the shoreline as Justin takes us into this meditation. Danny takes his usual role of the eight-armed kraken. Maynard singing like a choir boy. We're lulled into a blanket of spatial bliss, only to feed us into the grinder, to be bent, folded, spindled, and mutilated. This brings us down a hole of hell by way of the dentist chair, like falling through Sweeney Todd's victims into the cold depth oceans below, feeling the crushing waves on top of us as we slip to the bottom, all the while getting more intense, more plodding, more demanding. Marching tanks and machines of destruction cloud my mind as this builds to its ultimate crescendo. Adam cuts through the clouds like shafts of screaming sunlight and delivers a victorious angel's trumpet with his signature triple rectified tone, cutting through and obliterating whatever it was pointed at, decimating the opposition with a mighty stomp of his wah or his talk box, the mighty talk box. As the band bashes and kicks at it, stomping on it until it's dead in the middle of the square, bleeding, and so's my ears as the wash of the waves drag me away and bring me back down to earth, where I'm hungry and decide to make myself a sandwich.
JD.
How do you come up with that shit? Right? It's to me. That's what I was thinking. I almost like put it in. It's like, that was fucking beautiful too.
Jeez, like, I don't even want to talk after that.
What do I say? There's slide guitar in here. That's cool. That's different. They don't usually do that for a hot second. Lyrically, this is cool. This is another one that has interesting, the madness of our own making that we're descending into. This is our swan song and our epilogue. Don't know if they're talking about the end of their band, the end of the world, the end of our general sensibilities. I think in this song, Adam has probably four or five different guitar tones. Each of them are interesting, and I like it. This is another song that we didn't address. There was a track before this, if you don't have the CD, that I'll leave Sam to rant about if he would like.
I won't do that. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. But you don't need it because, again, we get 2 minutes of the ocean before a song even starts. So that's the type of stuff that just is kind of ridiculous. But generally speaking, this is a song, if I were to pick of all of the what I would consider six real songs, and we'll talk about that later. This is probably my least favorite of the group. I do like how it ends from 9:28 on. It's probably the best part. With the chug riffing again, which they do way too often in this, and the atmospheric kind of keys that come in, the solo over the double kick hits, opens up again. Adam showcases himself a lot more, especially at the end of this track, than normal, with all the different guitar tones, the different solo figures. But in general, this is probably the one that I would not listen to the most.
Mike.
All right, so I am on Team JD with this one. So everybody talks about ending and things ending, and this is basically, I'm getting close to the end of my interest in this record at this point. I like what I've heard so far, but I'm stealing a line from a friend. We were talking about a person. So, but this phrase comes from her. I'm repurposing it for this. This is the Toolest song Tool could have done. all the songs on this album, they definitely have a stamp. I think years from now, people who are mildly interested in Tool, if they read some reviews, they're going to be able to hear the song and go, oh, that's got to be off Fear Inoculum, just by the way it's described. It has all the trademarks of everything we've already heard on this record. JD, I did write, I like the slide, though. And there's some little guitar minis that come out of that a little bit. So it was like that. But this song is not doing anything for me at all. And the fact that it's 13 minutes and 37 seconds long, I can't have it. This is
Mike's unimpressed fluffy fuckery.
Sam.
Well, I agree with everyone so far. I think of this song as kind of like if you skip that shit that was number five, that Legion Inoculant, that they decided they would put on here for us to listen to is fucking offensive, man. It makes me angry because I like listen to this record, man. And the reason that I had a hard time was this shit too. What do I say about that shit?
That's why we're skipping it.
That's why we're not.
I'm glad you're letting me rant because I had a problem with that shit, man. Anyways, now Descending's great, man. I love Descending. It's like a sister song to Invincible. It seems like if you skip those that piece of shit in the middle there, they go together nicely. But it also sounds the same. It could be the same fucking song, and that's where I have a problem with the length of these songs, man. I think they could trim the fat. You guys already said everything that was great about the song, but they could trim the fat and these songs would be even better, man. I promise they would. I promise. It doesn't need to be 16 fucking measures of them changing between 7 and 8 and 5. It doesn't have to be that. You could just do like 4 and we'd get the point, man. We're not stupid. You know what I mean? Okay, that's all.
Well, it starts with what sounds like a wind and water sound effect provided by Lustmord a la Quadrophenia. Then it's like the last track, except it starts with a bass figure instead of guitar. Then the guitar is clean and has a Leslie speaker warbling effect on it, as does Keenan's voice. It's another slow builder. Carrie's beat has a tribal quality to it, and it takes quite a while to get some heaviness going here. The heavy main riff is ridiculously simple, and it goes on and on at a lumbering pace, and whoever thought an Adam Jones slide guitar solo was a good idea ought to have his fucking head examined. As always, the drumming has moments of sheer brilliance, and Jones does throw in some volume swells that he loves so much. And fuck me, this thing is 13 minutes and 38 seconds. It's been mentioned already. And there are parts where I'm just fucking bored. And what's up with the 70s sci-fi synths? Don't do this shit, Tool. Maynard James Keenan sees the end times coming, and it's our own making. The human race is a species. We fucked ourselves, and we've sealed our doom. And Keenan says, wake the fuck up and get ready. If you want to stay alive, you better sound the alarm and mobilize. Man, this thing is too long and plodding. It's like a 13 and a half minute dirge. I don't need that in my life. The following track is Culling Voices. JD, how about this one?
Well, more of the same. We start with some atmospheric keys this time. And the guitar figure that opens is a little brighter than normal. Maynard's vocal is spacey. About half the song is really just all of the atmospheric little percussion with really Maynard just really nicely singing to us about psychopathy and misleading us over and over. And okay. So 5:30 into the song. Yes, 5:30, where a normal song would have long been done. We get our first kick drum hit. And now I'm excited. What will happen? We get a nice guitar figure, a good riff. It builds up. We get a heavier guitar figure. I don't know. This seems like more of the same. We keep going back and forth. We build, we not build, we build, we don't release. And then we actually do get a pretty good full jam at the end. Nice carry feels, nice feedback back into that atmospheric bit. This is another one I skip.
Rockin' Mike.
All right. I have a feeling we're all on the same page here, too. Another 10-minute song with a minute and a half of Fibonacci sequence-laden ambient noodling. It's like, by this point, we know Tool made a record for themselves. That's all this is. That they made a record for themselves. It still sounds like Tool at every turn. The vocal delivery is more reminiscent of the stuff Maynard does from Perfect Circle. The middle third of this song is why the light show live needs to be so good. because this was the ninth song they played of an 11 song set. So at this point, you're right around an hour and a half in, and then you get this middle third that was just like, what the fuck? Musically, I mean, you're so enthralled with the lights. That's what gets you through this song. And I think that's the biggest thing that I took away is I absolutely loved watching them. They did six of these seven songs live, and I was like, man, they're awesome. This is great. I'm going to love reviewing this album. And then we sit down and I'm listening to it. I'm like, these are the same songs that I was drooling over 2 weeks ago live. And it does not work on this format. It doesn't. It's like performance art. This is the soundtrack to the performance. This is the soundtrack to the light show you're watching. This is the soundtrack to the pretentiousness that I've always railed on about them. The, you know, go to see them and I was like, oh yeah, maybe I'll pick up some merch. They had this on vinyl, autographed for the low, low price of $500 motherfucking dollars. And I'm like, what was that?
Fuck that, man.
It started out at $7.99 and people flipped out.
Yeah, well, or you could get it on CD for $300. And then, like, Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was fucking a poster from the show. Oh, I'll get a poster. Oh, sorry. The poster sold out, but it doesn't matter because it cost $80. And I'm like, oh, my God. And at the end, I still loved it. I was like, OK, I'm now a Tool fan because I took that fucking ass raping. And I was like, wow, that was really good. Could I have some more? Like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Do you want to go camping?
Like, yeah, you want to go camping? Like, if you were going camping and you woke up with your butt hurt, would you tell anybody? No? You want to go camping? That's what I feel like with Tool right now. Because I read through all that, I walked out and I went, first thing I did was text all of you guys. And I'm like, oh, it was awesome. And it really was. And then when I sat down, I finished my notes this morning and I'm writing the notes for this. And I was like, did I really enjoy that? I really did. I really did enjoy it live. And I'm like, you know, I'm not expecting that kind of metallic release that I want. But then they fucking, like JD said, they throw that riff in there and you're like, oh, did Master gave Dobby a sock? Like, what the fuck? And no, they don't deliver. Like, what the fuck? Sorry, that was way too rambling and I apologize. But I'm pissed at this point.
Go rocking, Mike.
I did not expect this review to go this way at all. Sam.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with Mike. Okay. Oh, wait, what song are we doing now?
calling voices.
Okay. Shit. Okay. Yeah, man. I agree with everything that Mike said. I do find this song more interesting than the two real songs before it. But again, I get fucking bored, man. If I could like look at the lights, maybe do some whippets and mushrooms. Yeah, I'm all in on this shit. But damn, man, those early records, the throwaway songs like this is, were fucking great. This is just okay. And I'll agree with everyone that's already spoke. I'm sure Lou's got something, right? Did you already talk, Lou?
No. Lou, tell us why we're all wrong.
Okay.
Check it out. Just do what I do, okay? Just play this note. And then we both keep playing that note. Every once in a while, bend it. And that's it. And just remember who wrote that song. Me, baby. Me.
Next song.
See? It's fucking simple. That's one song in the bank. Next song. Next song.
But it's one
next
note. Anybody could have wrote it. Anybody could have done that. It's one song.
Yeah, but guess who did write it? Me.
Yeah, but did you write this?
Dude, I did. I told you to do the bendy every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I win. Shit. I win 1-0.
This does have a more perfect circle feel to it in the beginning. Very atmospheric wash that's quickly put to bed with Adam piercing through the miasma with the simple picked pattern that varies on the 7. Maynard's got a Catholic mass cadence. Adam's got a few more layers of different strum and pick patterns building uneasy tension, like static electricity on a surface. Molecules sizzle on the surface as Justin's bass and Danny's foot come into the picture, feeling a low vibration that grounds you. Adam changes his tune. Now he's playing power chords. He begins a more aggressive riff, and Tool crashes in and rips the solitude in half as the gigantic monster crashes through the portcullis and rips the door from the transom. Slowing to build more tension, they regroup and lash out again, this time as a three-headed beast. Danny and Adam at the lead, while Justin rides the massive thunderhead like a charging elephant, clearing a field. And as I feel another Toolgasm coming on, to slow to a stop and let us down easy in one of the most disappointing buildups of the record. Where's the rest of this? What's next? A fucking drum solo on a studio record?
Oh, shit. Atmospheric synths give way to a quiet, clean guitar figure that gets augmented by more clean guitar overdubs and goes on and on while Keenan sings softly. We don't hear Chancellor's bass or Carey's drums until halfway through this 10-minute song. I think, JD, you said that right off the top. And this being Tool, of course, it gets heavier, but it's a slow fucking trudge to get there. When it does kick in, I really dig the main riff. And the drums are syncopated as fuck, so yeah, the song gets much better. But man, the slow burn it takes to get there is a fucking slog. The lyrics to me are about the voices we all hear in our heads, the imagined conversations and arguments we have with the people we know in our lives, and how if we're not careful, we can get lost in our own thoughts and let them take over us. Or it's about a schizophrenic, you tell me. This track is too damn long for what it's offering me. Cut this bitch down about 4 or 5 minutes and get back to me. The penultimate track is Chocolate Chip Trip. You like this one?
I actually do, because the drums actually, he actually hits his drums quicker than a second apart. Like there's actually some up tempo stuff to it. I really don't mind it. And the drum solo is over 4.5 minutes, but I really don't mind it. It was kind of a nice change of pace to everything else that we've been listening to so far. And I guess it kind of is there to build to the next song, maybe. And it's not really an intro, but they did this one live as well. So it is what it is. Is this his attempt at Moby Dick? I don't know. We'll see.
Sam?
No. That's not Moby Dick. It's not Bonzo's Montreux. This is horrible, man. What's fuck all your goddamn sense, man? Yeah. You're the best fucking drummer alive, and what are you doing, man? And why does it have to be so long? No.
That's what she
said. No, I feel like Michael Scott. No! It's like seeing Toby, man. Fucking no! I don't want to hear this shit, man. They're so capable of so much fucking more than they have, like, enhanced my lives for so many years, and now what am I sitting through? I can't take it. No.
Lou.
Come on, dude, hurry up. Come on, the line's too long.
This is really the bummer of the album, isn't it?
Yes.
It wrecks the flow and really throws a monkey wrench into your trip. I dig Danny Carey. I really do. I dig him. And I believe he's possibly the greatest drummer on the planet. And I also believe that drum solos are for concerts and for some live records, not your studio output. Your drum skills should shine through the songs and not be the song. And this is a waste of time and apparently valuable CD time space here.
JD.
Oh, did we get to Tempest yet?
Oh, shit. You know, with the death of Neil Peart, Danny Carey is the heir apparent of the greatest living rock drummer to my mind. Actually, we've all been saying this. Every Tool episode we've done, I've sung this guy's praises. And here we get a full-on 4 minute and 48 second drum solo. And the first 2 minutes of it sucks ass. Wind chimes, gongs, electronic treatments. Who the fuck does Carey think he is? Brian Eno? Now, eventually he gets up to some interesting tribal drum patterns and he shows off some of his fearsome chops. But wow, did I expect more from this? Hate to say it, especially as it's the shortest track on the record by a country mile, but it's Aaron's Stinky Stinker. And that brings us to the final track, Seven Empest. How about this last one, Sam?
Man, I really like this song, if I can just let it flow. Because we've got a decent solo from Adam. I've always loved his tone. I think somebody mentioned that before. I like the way he plays. And I like the way that he and Justin Chancellor move in and out. They kind of weave together, and they do that some in this song. But, man, it's too goddamn long. Man, you could have done that in like 8 minutes and blew on everybody's minds. You could have done everything that you did in 15 minutes in 8 minutes. When you're listening to it and listening with a critical ear, it's annoying. Because it's like, come on, get to it, man. It's like, what are you doing? I don't give a fuck if I piss off any Tool fans, man. It's true. It's hard to listen. This whole record is hard to listen, man. So I like the fact that Adam Jones, spread his wings and did what he could. But he's not Eddie Van Halen, and I think you would all agree. He's not that damn good, okay? He can fucking do a 5/8 time signature and, you know, whatever time signature he wants, but he can't do that. So maybe you could cut out that 5.5-minute guitar solo that's not that great. But I'm glad that he tried. And okay, that's it.
Lou.
The opening pattern splits, then subdivides, then splits again, all inversions of the number 7. Then Adam steps on his distortion and goes through it all over again. Danny hears it and joins in, and Maynard grabs a hold and sounds almost pissed. He's got to slog through another one. Here we go again. All getting more aggressive as it progresses. They shake this baby. Shake the baby! Shake the motherfucker they do. Small amounts of tension and release. They touch on a discography of Tool tunes. This is like a grand finale where all the themes of the evening are brought back into the one final epic tune. There are shades of Lateralis, Anima, 10,000 Days, and Undertow all wrapped up in one here. And while it's welcome, there's nothing new going on here, and there's no tension release. No Toolgasm! Last song on the album, and I still haven't had a Toolgasm. It comes close to what feels like one. You know what it comes close to? It comes close to that blowjob in the back of the movie theater where she keeps looking up at you just as it starts feeling good, and she's asking, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? Shut up. And it doesn't bring me to the feeling of well-being that it should, and I'm feeling on edge, tense, aching for release, and my balls feel heavier, and my entire body feels like it's restrained by a giant cock ring around my torso, preventing me from fucking relaxing, finding a comfortable place. Just bursts of fresh air, few and far between, from keeping you from losing it, but the tension just builds and builds, and the tempest must be just that. Tempest must be just that. Here it comes, guys. I can feel it. Danny kicks in with the stuttering double bass. Justin shuddering low end, mirroring Danny's feet. Adam shrieking guitar stabs cut through the fog like fucking laser beams. They can feel it coming. Almost at the point of no return. Holding the back of her head. I can feel it bubbling in my cockles. Ready to let it go, but what's happening? They're loosening their grip and slowing down. What the fuck? No, I'm losing it. It's fading. And they ruin what could have been the most epic toolgasm. Instead, turns into the shittiest blowjob I ever got. Sitting left disappointed with my virtual cock in my hand, and I got nothing to show for it but a box of clean tissues and a $70 single CD.
JD,
why do I gotta keep following that guy?
You can't, man.
Jeez. Let him go. Can we start with why the seven Tempest? Okay. It's Tempest. That's the name of the song. Take your seven, go home. But it is actually, after Numa, it's my second favorite song. All the things that Lou said was good about it, I agree it's good about it. It touches on all of the old Tool stuff. You got a very Undertow sounding riff. You got a lot of different movements in there. Different time signatures, of course, is Tool. I don't need to tell you that. But it sounds old school. The angry vocal from Maynard, I'll take all day, versus the sleepwalking vocal and culling voices. I like that Adam gets a chance to flex a little bit. I think most Tool fans would tell you, I think I mentioned this already, you know, Danny Carey's obviously world-renowned, best drummer percussionist out there. Heir apparent to Neil Peart, I agree. He's the best drummer out there. Justin Chancellor is a bass player to drive a song to create a bed that everything else builds off. It's pretty unique. A lot of people would think of like a prog metal band where the lead instrument typically is the bass and not the guitar. It's unusual, but he does an amazing job of laying the melody out. But then in this case, Adam Jones is like, wait a minute, I can play. I can play a lot. I can play a lot of different stuff. You want to hear it? Here it goes. And then he plays it all. He plays everything he knows how to play right here. And I like it. It's pretty good. I can agree with Lou. It doesn't give you that send off, that grand finale you want. But at the end of the day, if I could take Numa and Tool, maybe give me Fear Inoculum and Invincible, put it all together, I still got a full length album and it's pretty good.
Rockin' Mike.
All right. So when this riff kicked in, the first time I heard the song, I was like, yes. And I felt like Devo, but I was going, scratch that itch. Because I'm like, this is what I want. I want that aggression. And then you listen to it a few more times, and you realize it's not any different than what you've heard already on the album. It's just they turned the aggression up. And again, I'm back to being, you know, Dobby gave Dobby and, you know, I'm back again because I'm still hoping for that, as Lou put, that toolgasm, and we're not going to get it. This and Invincible are my two favorite songs on the record. They didn't do this song when I saw them, and I was like, of all the songs not to do off this record, why is this the one you didn't do? They did fucking Chocolate Trip, whatever the fuck that thing is. They did that, but they didn't do this. And Lou, the reason why there is not any release is because while you're sitting in the back of the theater and it starts oh so good, the movie gets really bright and you look down, and when you finally see the girl, you realize it's just Maynard and drag. What happened?
Painted blue.
That's right.
Well, another clean guitar arpeggio intro with Eastern flavored percussion. Transitions into a heavy as fuck track with a cool riff, the rhythm section locked in together, and Maynard James Keenan finally showing some emotion and belting out the vocals with some growls for good measure. I fucking love the stop and start riffs and an odd time signature that the band seems to effortlessly knock off in their sleep. And now it's time to talk about Adam Jones. I have said on previous Tool episodes that I think out of these four musicians, that he's the weakest link, and I still think that. But I have seriously come to appreciate his heavy guitar tone. It's really distinctive. It has a serious crunch to it, and I really dig most of the riffs that he comes up with, including this track. This song is definitely designed to be his showcase. He gets a lengthy, and I mean lengthy, solo spot, while Chancellor plays a droning bass line and Carey thumps around all over the place underneath. It's broken up with Keenan huffing on about a tempest must be just that. And then we go off on another instrumental section while Jones wails away on another solo. He's not a great soloist at all. He mostly plays melodic phrases that kind of meander, and I'm like, does this track really need this? The lyrics seem to be about a person who seems to have a calm exterior, but inwardly they're raging and it comes out in explosive episodes like a storm, a tempest, if you will. And everyone in that person's life is aware of it and they're wary of it. They all know by now what the nature of the person is and are like, fuck, here we go again. If this song was cut in half, it would be my favorite track on the album, but it's not. It's 15 minutes and 44 seconds. So I still dig it, but come on. Now that the track by track is finished, we'll get into our final thoughts and album ratings. For you new listeners, the rating is a 0 to 5 system, with 5 being a favorite album of ours, all the way down to a 0, which is a 10-minute chocolate chip trip. JD, give us your final thoughts on Fear Inoculum.
Well, I'll let Sam comment on the fact there actually is another track, if you want, on the vinyl and in the digital.
Yeah.
Also okay. Unneeded. For me, this is interesting because if I dig in and I really listen to really specific tracks, I mentioned the four that I brought up, Fear Inoculum, Pneuma, Invincible, and Tempest. There's a lot to like there. There's a lot of sections that are really good they can get into. As a world-renowned air guitarist, I can enjoy trying to match Adam Jones' basic solos and his chugging riffs because I can do that pretty easily. And I was also surprised that in the course of the last couple of weeks where I was really listening to it, how much I could just put this record on and let it play for a solid hour and a half, and nobody was offended by it. It just played. And at some point, you would listen and go, I wonder what song this is. Is this Culling Voices? No, it's Descending. No, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't care. It's fine. It's just playing along in the background. So in general, I think it's a good record. It's a solid 3. It's not often that I can listen to a Tool record around my 8-year-old and not be worried about it. And there was times where she paid attention and go, Dad, how long is this song? Is it still the same song? Is this a different song? Dad, why are you listening to this one song that's so long, over and over? Dad, why are you listening to this at all? And I said, because it's good. And she said, okay, sure, Dad. And she walked away, and an hour and a half later, the record finished. So I give it a 3, but I really like Pneuma, and I really like Tempest. Those songs bang. The rest of it is too long, too much of the same, and not enough of what we were looking for.
Rockin' Mike.
I, too, give it a 3. So I think really, I touched on this before, but I really think it's more of a piece of performance art. I mean, they kind of even hinted at it with it, including the screen with the CD. Like, you need to watch something with this. Like, they got done with the record. They listened to it all the way through, and they're like, it's like one long trip. What are we going to do here? And it works well live. I really, really enjoyed it. And I can honestly say it was probably one of the top 5 concerts I've ever been to. And they did 6 of these 7 songs. It does not translate to sitting around and listening to it. It goes off the rails. Again, I'm with JD, Pneuma, Invincible, Tempest. I like them all. I have not listened to any of that extra ambient, whatever the fuck that is that Sam's been ranting about, but now I might just so I can share in his pain. I give it a 3. I am now a Tool fan, but it's not because of this record. It's because of their live experience.
Sam.
Okay, this last fucking song. It's like, what's it called? A mocking beat?
Mocking beat, yep.
Yeah, mocking beat. Why? You fucking do that. It pisses me off, man, because they think I'm stupid. Anyways, okay, that's all I gotta say. Man, I love Tool. I love those songs. I love, I was young and I was, in the midst of my discovery of the world when this band was, in my head, I guess, in my ears. And I had amazing experiences. And so I will always love this song. And I will come back to certain songs on here. Like Mike said, Pneuma, Invincible, and Tempest. I will listen to those again.
Tempest maybe in the background and not paying attention because it's too goddamn long. But I will do it again, and I really appreciate it. But I have to ask Aaron one thing. He gave 10,000 Days a 2.5. If he gives this record higher than a 2.5, then there's a problem. I give this a 3. It's a 3-2. Everybody's had a 3. I think there are bright, shining moments on this record, and then I'll always really love and show to people. But like some of the other things, man, just they're capable of way much more. And I think if you go back to their older stuff, it's obvious. But I'm so glad they're still making music, man. I love Tool.
Lou.
Yeah, Tool was an insta-buy when I first heard Sober on MTV. And it's been an automatic purchase for the rest of their catalog, as slowly as they fed it to us over the years for me. They peaked with Lateralis, in my opinion, and started showing cracks around 10,000 Days. While Anima and Lateralis are perfect five-star masterpieces for me, and in my opinion, 10,000 Days would be a 4, despite the 13-year gap between records and the advancement of technology between the two albums, I give Fear Inoculum a 3 as well. It has all the right ingredients and calls back to some of the classic Tool moments from the catalog. It misses the mark in one key area. The record isn't the full body heave that the rest of the catalog has. Songs like Anima, Push It, Ticks and Leeches are nowhere to be found here, and in their place are slightly watered-down facsimiles of Abandon Their Prime. Songs like these take you to the edge of the cliff and dangle you over the edge, sometimes for a bit longer than comfortable, and then drop you into the nexus, into Toolgasm, full body heave that occurs while you're spiraling out and floating through space, makes it feel like you've dropped out of the bottom of the universe. And here they tease you with brilliance, but then leave you wanting. Maybe if Maynard wasn't so preoccupied with the two other touring bands, he would have spent more time on the Tool project that got him into the building to begin with. Simply put, Maynard sounds like he phoned this one in to keep his buddies quiet. I still like it and go back to it often, but let's call a spade and say it isn't as good as the rest. They could have called this Dayquil. It's got the same effect. Tastes similar, kind of, but it's missing an ingredient that just doesn't get you off like the old NyQuil does.
I love NyQuil, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's the best shit ever invented, isn't it, huh? I love the name alone. NyQuil, capital N, small y, big fucking Q. I love that fucking Q, don't you? What a great advertising idea. Put a huge fucking Q on the box. They'll get high and stare at it. The Q is talking to me. The Q is talking to me.
I remember when this record came out and it caused a big stir when it knocked Taylor Swift's latest album off the number one spot at the time. And all those little Swifties were like, what the fuck is Tool? It was a funny moment. And man, did the Tool Army deserve it. Wait, Tool Army? Really? That's what they call themselves? Because they waited 13 years for this bad boy. Now, I'm going to be realistic here. I am probably never going to enlist in the Tool Army, but since we started this podcast, I have really come to appreciate the band's music. It has so many elements that I'm drawn to that the disconnect I felt at first is really just my own unwillingness to open my mind and really listen. And on that note, I'd like to offer a public apology to Mr. Sam George for shitting on this band so hard on the prior Tool episodes. If we were to review those two albums today, they would both get a much higher rating from me. Sorry, Sam. Now, all that said, I have listened to the 5 studio LPs and the Opiate EP, and out of all of those albums, Fear Inoculum is my least favorite, which isn't to say that it's bad. I really dig the first 2 tracks a lot, and there's always something in the remaining 5 that I like. I don't think this record sucks at all, but fuck me sideways. 7 tracks clocking in at a total time of 80 minutes, 6 tracks over 10 minutes. Look, I've always said that I'm not afraid of long songs, but that's ridiculous, especially when there's so much repetition in the songs that could have been cut out and would have made this record leaner, tighter, and more enjoyable for me. As always, the musicianship is stellar. Danny Carey is a freak of nature, and I have always liked Maynard James Keenan's voice and lyrics. Justin Chancellor is an excellent bassist, and yes, I dig Adam Jones's riffs. The whole Tool package is fascinating with the Adam Jones artwork and visuals, and I have a strong suspicion that if I ever see this band live, I would become a full convert. Their presentation of lights and effects is supposed to be second to none. My co-hosts pretty much confirmed that, right, guys? But come on, Tool. Fellas, seriously, get back in your Pro Tools and do some fucking editing, will ya? I give Fear Inoculum a 2.5. And my, what a strange journey I have taken with this band. I leave it with this statement, which for most of my life, I never thought I'd ever say. I like Tool. Now we'd like to thank Jason Donsis for coming back and taking some Tool time with us. Good times, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Stay tuned for more news about the transition. And if everyone would like to go to our Patreon page, State of America, on Patreon, we have a free tier that you can just follow. It doesn't cost you any money, but news will be posted there as things move forward after the new year.
All right, cool. And that's going to do it for this episode. You can find this podcast on all the podcasting platforms wherever you listen to them. If you like what you hear, please subscribe or follow the podcast and leave us a review. If you'd like to contact us directly, we can be reached at ridiculousrockrecords@gmail.com. Or also on the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews Facebook page, where there's a link to hear each podcast. We're also on Twitter at R4PodcastAaron and Instagram under R4Podcaster. Feel free to leave all of your feedback, comments, reviews, and or suggestions at any of those places I just described. We'd love to hear from you. So for the R4 Podcast, I'm Aaron.
I'm Rockin' Mike.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Lou.
See ya.
Master gave Dobby a suck.
Bless this immunity.
Ah, I see you have the machine that goes bing!
It still is through JD. Taylor Swift's song is like 4 seconds shorter, but hers is the longest one to make number one.
Wait, hold up. Why are we Swifties now? Come on, man. That's my bad. I apologize.
Yeah, it's fucking JD's fault. He's ruined me.
Didn't this record get knocked out of number one by Taylor Swift?
This knocked Taylor Swift off of number one.
That's what happened. I remember.
Let's go. It was fucking hilarious. I remember that whole thing. That's so.
Yeah, and then they put all their albums up digitally, so then they dominated like the top 5 spots or something like that.
Something like that.
Just like she's doing now. She's put all her albums out, and it's fucking, she's got like 10 in the top 10 right now. Silly how fucking rich that girl is.
I think she's going to probably be the first billionaire, a musical billionaire. I think she recently did it, didn't she? I don't know.
Oh, did she?
I think so. Anyway.
Only here can a Tool review become a Taylor Swift.
This is going to be the chipmunk section, I can tell you that.
If I was that football player, I would be, like, just praying to any god that I could.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine how long that prenup's going to be.
Oh, my. You know he's ripping that ass.
Get it, Travis. Get it.
There's a tight end joke in there somewhere.
Sure is. Yes, there is.